Good morning, listeners. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this show, visit kuci.org. Our show is called In the Garden, and it's produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. Our topic today is indoor plants. I'm DC Morgan, your host and a volunteer with the Master Gardeners. And with me today, I'm really happy and excited to talk with Julie Bodden Davis, a garden author and Master Gardener, as well as she's written over 12 books and just a very impressive resume. For example, Parade Magazine, April 23rd of last year, 23, since 1985, has written publications for Organic Gardening, Wildflower, Better Homes and Gardens, The Gardener, and she was a columnist for the LA Times and the San Francisco Chronicle. She is the author of over 12 books, and I'll just mention a few of them here. One of them is The Strawberry Story, How to Grow Great Berries Year-Round in Southern California, Indoor Gardening the Organic Way. She is the founder of HealthyHousePlants.com, and her backyard is a certified wildlife habitat by the National Wildlife Federation. Welcome, Julie. Tell us how you got started in this. I understand that you were a child.
Yes, I was, and it's very nice to be here. Thank you. It all started in a drugstore and it was the 1970s. So there were houseplants everywhere. And at that point, I met and fell in love with a coleus plant. It was a gorgeous burgundy one. I remember walking up to it and petting it and thinking, could I get this to grow? And I decided to give it a try, and I'm very glad I did. Got it home, and I thought, well, okay, I need to start researching. How do I get this to grow well? So that was back when you needed to go to the library to get information, which I did. I believe one of my parents dropped me off, and I went in with a little notebook, which I found recently, which was very cool.
Oh, how precious.
And I started making notes about how to get them to grow well, the houseplants to get them to grow well. And then I decided to branch out from there and started taking notes on how to propagate them and what you would need to propagate them. So my little burgundy coleus grew really well. And then I ended up doing was propagating that. So about 30 coleuses later, I thought, okay, now I'm ready to branch out into other types of plants, which I did.
Wow. And what was it like? Something like $3, the original price of the coleus?
Yes, I believe it was something like $2.79, yeah. Something like that.
And allowance.
My allowance wasn't that much back okay. then. Yeah.
And how did you propagate it? From root?
So I found out you could do from cuttings, and you can also grow them from seed as well, which is really fun too. But I did it from cuttings in water, and then planted them in soil. And
once the roots came out,
yeah,
you planted them in the soil.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And are the seeds very big for a coleus?
The seeds are very small.
Yeah.
And if you let the plant go to seed, and I have coleus right over there, actually.
Oh, yeah.
If you let the plant go to seed when it has a little flower spike, a lot of times they'll say to take that off because you don't want the plant to get too leggy and that sort of thing. However, if you let them go to seed, then you can replant those seeds. You could plant those seeds, which is fun to see what you'll get.
Yeah? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about interior decor with plants.
Yeah, so that's one of the wonderful things about houseplants I just love, because they're beautiful, they're architectural, and one of my favorite aspects is the fact that there's so many different types of foliage and colors and color patterns. The variegation on them is incredible, mm-hmm. and you can mix and match them with your home decor. So things like your sofa, so upholstery, and also window coverings, and even your paint. And one of my favorites is with paintings. And my daughter does a lot of painting. My son also has done some in the past too. And my mother did too. So I like to juxtapose a plant that has similar color patterns and even maybe the shapes of the leaves also against the paintings and artwork and such. Very pretty.
Yeah. I love that the beautiful greens and the other colors, the textures, and it gives a peaceful vibe, I think.
Very peaceful, yes. Yeah. You'll notice when you go into model homes, they will have houseplants. And if you go into one that doesn't have any, it doesn't feel like that homey, like I want to move in here kind of vibe. So that's why they do that.
Interesting. Okay, what about we talk about tips for taking care of houseplants?
Yes, so we'll go through those very important tips because obviously you want to have a really healthy houseplant as well. So one thing to keep in mind is when you're first getting your houseplant, because houseplants are slow to react to mistreatment, I should say. So if you were to find a houseplant out in bright sun, for instance, it may not, depending on where you buy it from, you want to watch where you buy your houseplants from, especially if you're doing a purchase that some large floor plants, houseplants can be very expensive. I mean, we're talking like a couple hundred dollars,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So you want look at where you're buying it from and if it looks like they're keeping good care of it. The plants shouldn't be sopping wet because they've been overwatered. And like I said, they should be in the right exposure in terms of lighting, because what'll happen sometimes is people will get plants and then a week later that's not doing well. And it has nothing to do with what they did. It has to do with what happened before. Yes. So where you choose it from. And when you're choosing the houseplant, looking at it, things like, I'll often hear if there's roots coming out of the drainage hole, that's okay. Actually, it's kind of a good thing to see a little bit of root coming out of the drainage holes, because that means the plant is very healthy and growing well.
Growing, yeah.
And you can also check out the roots at that point. What you can do, what you want to look for, is you want the roots to be white, cream colored, tannish, not black and mushy.
Ooh, no.
what you're looking for is things like root rot, right? So
yes.
If the soil is very wet and the plant is drooping, that's obviously a sign that that's not a good choice for you, probably, unless you want to save the plant. I have done that for my videos, just so you know, I can teach people how to save a plant with root rot. Actually, that plant right there was one that was I named him Henry. That's Henry. He was saved. Yeah.
He's looking good, looking healthy.
Yeah. So your gut instinct, right? A lot of times you'll see a plant and you just think, I don't know, it just doesn't, there's something not quite right. Because another thing what the growers will do is they use artificial growth hormones to get the plants to grow quickly so that they can sell them, because that's their business, right? But the problem is the plant will go into detox mode when you get it. And that's how some plants, so I just mentioned this because a lot of people have tried houseplants and they think, I have a black thumb, but it has nothing to do with their thumb. It has to do with prior.
And so, like, then after they start coming down, they'll look bad, but then you can revive them, hopefully.
Yes, a lot of times you can revive them. There's also things you can do when you get them, which I can cover now if you want, or I can cover as we go. But you really want to detox them from things like the artificial growth hormones, because those aren't available to the home gardener. However, the really good news is there are a couple of different organic products you can use that are natural growth hormones.
Okay.
Alfalfa meal is one of them.
Oh.
And the sea kelp and seaweed, the sea kelp products, you know, any of the kelp products as well. So those have the natural growth hormones. So it's good to start fertilizing them with that when you get them. And another thing that's really good to do is to either repot the plant. I'll talk about something very important about the right size of potting when we talk about repotting in a bit here. However, if you feel like the plant needs to be repotted, you can get it into some organic soil. That's good. A lot of times they'll be super loaded with chemical fertilizers that really get them growing, once again, to get them growing. But then the plant, the plant's like, where's my fix? Exactly. What's going on here? And you're like,
watering, and you've given it everything you need. It needs.
So those fertilizers, as mentioned, organic fertilizers, and
so
then
that, excuse me. So again, that was for natural growth hormones. It's alfalfa.
Alfalfa meal. And alfalfa meal comes separate. It also comes in some fertilizers, but it's a fertilizer.
And what seaweed was it?
So sea kelp extracts. They have those in granular form. They also have them in liquid form too.
Okay.
So any of those derivatives of that as well.
That's really helpful.
And then leaching the soil. So if you don't have time to repot, and or you're winter time is not the great time to repot your houseplants, for instance, and leaching the plant, running water through the soil, will leach out a lot of the stuff that's in there until you can get to. So you're basically going from a fast food diet to a whole grain or organic diet for your houseplants. Yeah. But it will help them. So.
Yeah, rinse them off with room temperature water.
Oh, yes. Okay. And let me cover that right now with the watering.
Okay.
So watering is, I would say, if you have to choose the top reason why houseplants don't do well, it's watering mishaps, let's call them. Not watering the plant enough is pretty obvious, right? So if you don't, plants need water. They're made of water, quite a bit of water. So if you don't water it enough, it will
droop and
fail,
and edges droop. Will be browner.
They can get, exactly, crispy edges.
Yeah, crispy.
And the plant will drop when it's stressed. It'll drop leaves as well. Mm-hmm. So you may have a plant that you water, it starts to come back, but then it drops leaves because it was just so stressed from being droughted. So obviously,
patience.
So, and another thing to keep in mind too is if you have a plant that droops and you water it, and it doesn't come back within a few hours, it doesn't mean that it's not going to. Some plants will take a week to actually back to, and then you'll be able to see what needs to be pruned off, if it's going to live, et cetera. So that's important to know. There are certain plants that will, like the peace lilies, bathophyllum.
I was just going to say, usually by the next morning.
Yeah, and even within a few hours, it will be like, oh, good, I didn't kill it.
Yeah.
The Phytonia is another one. It will droop like it's, very dramatic drooping, and then you water it, and it's like, oh, I'm okay now. But then there's other ones. So maidenhair fern does not agree with being droughted, but you can bring that. So you can bring some of them back, but with patience, and then you a lot of times have to down pot them.
Down pot.
Yeah.
That's a new
I'll finish watering, then I'm going to talk, and I should just talk about potting since I've already mentioned it a couple times here. So the always watering, as you mentioned, with room temperature or even warm water. And a lot of times I will have people ask, well, I'm not doing that outdoors, so why would I need to do that indoors? Well, indoor climate is much different than the outdoor climate. For one, the soil in your containers is room temperature. And most people keep their homes between 65 and 75, somewhere in there, right?
Right.
So imagine in the winter when the water is 40 degrees and you're putting it in on those roots that are in 70 degree, it's a huge difference. And they have done studies that show that it will cause root dieback. Mm-hmm. And then it also will cause spottings on the leaves and things like that. So that cold water is not good. And obviously it's a little bit more of an issue in the winter when the ground is colder and the water is colder, but it's still, so room temperature, warm water is, you always want to do that with houseplants.
Oh, that's such a good tip. I need to do that because I just turn the faucet on and put it in.
And then, exactly. And then the overwatering is the other side of this. And that's very common because people will love their plants too much, be very concerned that they're not getting enough water. Most plants, not all of them, there are things like maidenhair fern is one where you really don't want to let those go dry. There's certain plants that like to stay a little on the moist side, but a lot of the house plants really need to go almost dry before you water them again.
Good point.
And that's a good way to prevent the root rot. And root rot, you'll know you have if the soil's staying moist and the leaves are drooping
and they're not coming back to life after you've watered.
And yellowing.
Yellowing, yeah, and falling off. And what happens is that the roots, with the rot, shut down. So the leaves, people will think, oh, I need to give them a little more water because they're, it's a vicious cycle, becomes a vicious cycle. And yes, the leaves are starving for water, but they're starving for water because the roots have shut down. So that's when you, if you can stop, so if you stop watering, then what'll happen, you can potentially save the plant. And there's things with peroxide to treat the roots with, to kill the fungal pathogens and that sort of thing. So did you want me to cover repotting?
Let's talk about repotting.
Because that does kind of segue into this whole thing. With if you've overwatered, you're having root rot, that means the roots are rotting, they're dying back, right? Okay, so you have less root in that pot. Now, very common problem that I see and the way that people kill their houseplants without knowing is to put them in too big of a pot. So the rationale is I'm going to put my plant here in a big pot so it's going to grow really, really big and fill in, and then I won't have to repot for a long time. Well, you won't have to repot for a long time because the plant's not going to make it. Because what happens when you put a plant in that much soil is the soil stays wet. It's like planting in a lake. The soil stays wet because there's not enough roots to absorb the moisture. And so then the roots start rotting because there's too much moisture. And what'll happen is the plant, even some plants that can tolerate that moisture, they just won't grow. So, and I had someone recently tell me, I have had this palm, and palms are usually fast growers. I have one back there that's pretty big, right up there. And it hadn't grown in 3 years at all because it was in too big of a pot. So it was surviving the wet, but just not growing. So what you want is a ratio of 2/3 plant on top to 1/3 pot below. So you can see, like right there, you see that 2/3 this plant. There's a Dracaena marginata. Another thing is 2/3 root to 1/3 soil too.
So mainly root.
Yeah, a lot of root. And you'll be surprised when you start to pack in that soil, though, that there's still a lot of soil. But I also often see the reverse. And it doesn't even look good.
That would be me.
And it doesn't even look good to have the big pot and the little plant, right? So more, visually appealing as well.
Yeah.
So that is what really... So down potting I mentioned earlier. So if you have a plant that has root rot, you would not only take it out and treat the roots with hydrogen peroxide and get rid of the soil that was there and put it in obviously clean, fresh soil, but you would down pot to that ratio so that the plant is okay.
2/3 to 1/3.
Yeah. Okay. And you may even bring, a lot of times what you'll find plants in the nursery, house plants in the nursery that are in too big of a pot. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do that is they tend to sell by pot size. So they'll put this little plant in this big pot and then you bring it home thinking, well, they're the experts. They did this, right? And that plant will go downhill. So if you get one home like that, you definitely want to down pot
it. Yeah. I've noticed that with lots of plants at the nursery. I'm going, they want this much for this little plant and the pot's huge, and you go, well, we're buying the pot is what we're buying.
Yeah.
And the same with trees. The boxes they put them in have this little tiny tree in this great big box so they can charge more. Mm. But
yeah, well, you got to make your money, but
business. We do want you to stay in business, but
you want your plant to survive. So down pot when you get it home.
Down pot. That's a new word for me. That's great.
I think I may have coined it.
Okay, let's see. So let's talk about some of the features of hard-to-kill houseplants.
Yes, so they're the top things to look for when you have, when you're looking for the hard-to-kill houseplants. And it's really good to start with those, right?
Yeah.
So best in the lower light plants, things like pothos, cast iron plant, which is Aspidistra. We've also got the Dracaenas can grow in low light. Peace lily is really cool. One of my absolute favorites is African violets. And people don't realize this, but they bud up in northern exposure. This is a northern exposure. Oh, so this is where I'll bud them up. Yes. And then you can put them around the house, and then you put them back in the northern exposure.
To get the buds.
Yes. Okay. And the northern exposure is very low light as well. There's also a lot of the philodendrons will do pretty well in the lower light. Now, lower night, arrowhead vine is another one. Lower light is not necessarily no light, though. So you need some light. So if you had a northern exposure window, if you don't, then full spectrum lighting is the answer. And there's tons of really nice, there's very pretty lamps that you can get. But you just get a full spectrum bulb and put it in a regular lamp.
Oh.
And that gives you...
Full spectrum bulb will do it. Oh, uh-huh. That's a good tip.
Years ago, it used to be these metal halide lights that were huge, and they looked like space agey, and they were expensive. Yeah, exactly. But nowadays, it's just full spectrum bulbs. That mimics daylight. So there you go.
And you can just get those like at a big box store.
Yeah, nowadays they're available just about everywhere. Yes. So that's talking about a little bit on the lighting. And so wanted to mention that because people will have to put plants in a very dark area. If you're not be able to read very well in there, the plants, it needs to photosynthesize. It needs some light.
Photosynthesis.
So other things about the hard to kill plants, not requiring a lot of water or surviving periods of some neglect and drought. Sansevieria, for instance, is one. Cactus and succulents do really well if you just forget about them in your house. But there are quite a few plants that, as I mentioned about watering, that you can go for. You don't need to water the plants as much as you think, like a lot, depending on where it's located in your house and how big of the pot. And I would say also plants that are going to come back if you do drought them too much, right? Because that's easier than having a plant that you're like, well, this one's toast because it didn't get the water, right?
Right.
Thriving in various environments in your house as well. So... you could put it in the kitchen, you could put it in the bathroom, you could put it as providing it has enough light. So those would be the top things.
Like the maidenhair fern, which I love, which is so dainty, and those do great in bathrooms because of all the humidity.
They do, yeah. The maidenhair ferns do like bathrooms because you get that burst of humidity when someone's showering or something. And then, so the maidenhair ferns are tricky. Those are one of the harder ones because one little day of not watering them in time and they definitely protest. And also they like a lot of humidity. So I would say that's the top things.
So let's talk about some of the different hard-to-kill plants.
Yeah, so I mentioned pothos, and that one a lot of people know. It's very easy to grow. It will grow in almost any type of lighting. I have one in my bathroom, which doesn't get all that much light, that does well. And then I have some out here that are growing more, that grow more. So that's a really good one. One thing to keep in mind, however, with any of these plants, the lower the light that you put them in, even if they are low light plants, they're going to grow a lot more slowly.
Okay.
So because they don't have that light, they're not photosynthesizing as much. So that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
The pothos is one that you can keep in that lower light and it'll still be healthy. Another good one, the snake plant, also called mother-in-law tongue. That one's another good one for in terms of being easy to grow. That one you don't want to overlove because it will quickly succumb to root rot. So it's better to even let it drought. If it does drought, it will get crinkly, but all you have to do is water it, and a week or two later, it'll fill back up again. Interestingly, it was classified as a succulent, but it is no longer classified as a succulent. Yeah, they took it out of that.
I could see where it would be kind of on the border.
So that, but it has the same succulent properties. So that's how it was. That's how it became classified as, you know. And they do that. They'll reclassify plants, and it gets very confusing.
Yeah.
Also known as AKA.
Yeah. Oh, I wondered what happened. Yeah.
Aloe vera is very easy indoors. Same thing, providing you don't. And that is a succulent. Providing you don't overwater it. rubber plant. So that Henry is a rubber plant, okay. A rubber tree there. Yes. And they're very easy to grow, really easy to grow. Once again, you can let them kind of go dry. A lot of the plants with the thicker leaves are the ones that you can, that will take a lot more abuse than the thinner. You can think of the maidenhair fern with its very delicate, thin foliage. And then you've got the things like the rubber tree with very thicker foliage. A lot of philodendrons, there's philodendrons over there.
Yeah.
Some of the dracaenas. Oh, ZZ plant is another one for the list. I've got two of them, one here and one there. Those are great for hard to kill and easy to neglect. And actually, they like neglect too. So, low amount of watering, only water sometimes. And then Hoyas also are another really, they're beautiful. One over there, there, that's a variegated one. They're beautiful, and they're also known as wax plant is their common name. And they also, you don't want to overlove them. They need to not watered that often, and actually not even, you need to have just the right amount of fertilizing for them to flower. Mm-hmm. Too much fertilizing, they get the leaves get too green, they're not going to flower for you either.
I have one. That is one I have, and it's called, common name is Hindu rope, and it's gotten really long, so I took it outside and hang it from a pergola.
Oh, nice.
And it gives me good blossoms, and I call it, they're like Barbie blossoms because they look fake. They're pink and waxy, and they look like a Barbie toy. But I take pictures, and I send it to my niece who sent me the plant. And they're just beautiful. I guess also known as porcelain flower.
Right. Those are gorgeous. Does it smell at night? A lot of times they smell at night.
Oh, I'll have to check it out. I haven't gone up to it.
Yeah. So go smell her tonight.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another. That sounds like a really pretty, really pretty one too.
Yeah.
And they do like to be outdoors if they
can be in
direct light like you've done. Yeah, then they do perform well there too.
I've had friends take cuttings, and then it seems like it adds more to it. You know, it splits off.
Yes, it definitely does when you do a little pruning. Let's see, another good one: Swiss cheese plant, also called Monstera deliciosa. That one is, and I have one over there actually, and I have another one somewhere else. That one is pretty easy to grow despite how exotic it looks.
Yeah.
So that's another good one. Jade plant, one over there too. Those are very easy to grow. Another succulent that you can pretty much forget about and just as long as you don't overwater them.
I was just going to mention kind of a point of interest when I was looking up some information on the Monstera or the Swiss cheese. It said that the reason Mother Nature had made the little slits in it is so that it's from, I guess, tropical areas where heavy rains would break the branches.
Yeah.
So this way the rain just goes through and it doesn't harm the plant. So I thought that was a really interesting little tidbit on that.
Yeah, it's very cool, isn't it?
Yeah, very cool.
Actually, a lot of houseplants are from the jungle floors and they grow in the understory or they grow up into the trees like the Monsteras do. And so that's their origin. So I always tell people to think of how can you replicate where they're from as much as possible, because that's when you'll have the best luck.
That's probably the best tip of all. If you just go by that rule of thumb, that'd be great.
And then we also mentioned peace lily is also a really easy plant.
One of my favorites, yeah. And I understand it's a symbolic plant. It was discovered growing wild in Colombia in the 19th century. And it carries the symbol of sympathy, healing, hope, purity, and, of course, peace. And they say that it's commonly given as a gift to someone that has lost a loved one. Sometimes a card just doesn't feel like enough. So a peace lily would be really a nice little gift for them.
Definitely. Yeah, it's very common for that. I'll often have people ask me how they can save their peace lily that they got at someone's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, it is easier one of the easier ones to save, too.
Oh,
so
good.
I think they sometimes call it the resurrection plant as well.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, I'm going to take a little station identification break here. We need to let you know that this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, university, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information, visit kuci.org. Also, a reminder that as a community service, we offer a hotline where you can email questions along with a photo, if possible, to get answers based on research by the UC scientist. So please see our website. We also have links there on pest problems. There's a title called Pest Notes Indexed, and it's alphabetical, so depending on what your problem is, you can find it that way. Our website is mgorange.ucanr.edu, or just Google Master Gardeners of Orange County, but be sure and put California in there because several other states have Orange Counties, and we've gotten calls from people that are calling from Florida or New York. So, and now once again, this is the In the Garden Show. Today we're talking about indoor plants with Julie Bodden Davis. Now back to our show. Julie.
Okay, so
let's see. We left off with peace lily.
Yes, so that's, and the cast iron plant Aspidistra is another really nice one that is also hard to kill, pretty easy to grow, and the Dracaenas.
Yeah, I don't like Dracaenas.
Yes, Dracaenas, and they're so I love them because of their because they're easy to grow, also their versatility. There's so many variegated forms, and I have quite a few of them. So this is this one here is kind of more the common one that you see. It's Dracaena fragrans. And that one actually, when it becomes an adult, it will flower.
You're
indoors.
Kidding.
Yeah.
I've never had
And it's you'll know it is flowering because you'll walk into your house one night and think, oh my gosh, what is that lovely scent and where is it coming from? The first time it happened to me years ago, I did have a larger one. It was like, it took me a while to figure out what was happening because I didn't know where the beautiful scent was coming from. And then there's, you can see tons of, there's white outlines on the leaves. That's there's the Dracaena Janet Craig, which has a deeper green. Then there's also the Warneckii variety. And then, there's a bunch, you know, see with the strappy leaves. Mm. The Madagascar dragon tree is also a Dracaena. So there's quite a few Dracaenas, with, like I said, different patterns, different shape, different leaf sizes and that sort of thing. So it's a really, really good plant.
Are they all tropical? Pretty much.
I think so. I'd have to check on that for sure, though. Yeah. I think it varies somewhat. I think they're very common throughout the world.
Now, is the Dracaena, is this a good one that likes to be root-bound?
Yeah, so the Dracaenas can be pretty root-bound for quite a while. They'll keep going for you. Will they do a little bit better if they're not? Yes, but they can.
Yeah, because mine is really, it's really tall, and it's in the same pot that I've had it in. So I'm going to try transplanting
to
it.
So they're pretty, like, because that's the ease of growth, too, is not having to repot would be
frequently.
Another good thing.
Yeah. And you say only one size larger at a time.
Right, one size larger. And you may even find out when you get the plant out of there that it should go back in the same size, the same pot. Mm. And all you're doing is basically repotting into the same pot with fresh soil.
Fresh soil.
Because if you determine that when you do that, well, I don't think this bigger pot is, I think this bigger pot is just too big, then just put it in the same size pot.
Okay, good tip.
The dumb cane, I think you were going to mention that about.
Oh, yeah.
So dumb cane.
Oh, yeah. I wondered about the name, and they said it's because it's poisonous to humans and dogs and cats if you ingest it, because it inhibits speech. So you kind of go dumb, I guess, like deaf and dumb. And it's also another name for it is the leopard lily. And I was surprised. It grows fast, up to 2 feet a year. It's a tropical plant. But it does get spider mites. Can you describe spider mites? Because I have a hard time with those.
Sure. The spider mites are, they're basically mites. They are mites, but they look like spiders.
Okay.
And they, if they're a good way to see, one thing you'll see is you'll see cobwebs on the plant because they make
like spiders. They make little cobwebs. And then the other way you can determine if you have them is take a white piece of paper and shake the plant over it. And if you see a bunch of little things running around, those are probably spider mites. Spider mites thrive in dry conditions. So if you can keep things humidified, then that helps them.
Think it would be just the opposite.
Yeah. No. If you think about spiders, you'll find them in dry areas outside in the garden
That's
where
true.
They're, yeah. So the horticultural oils can kill them. Neem oil. I really like neem oil because it's derived from the neem tree. It will kill the pests on contact in terms of suffocation, but also what it does is it will prevent the adults from females from procreating,
okay.
Basically. Yeah.
Okay.
So that it helps so it has a lot of good properties there. and then soap sprays, those help as well. So giving the plant a bath on a regular basis and humidifying with humidity in some way, you can mist them. That helps keep the spider mites at bay. Talk a little bit about the dumb cane. So what happens is with the dumb cane, and there are actually quite a few houseplants that have this problem, but dumb cane is one of the worst. It has oxalic crystals and a property that's in the leaves. And what it can do is it will inflame and hurt the vocal cords, the mouth and everything. So you can't speak.
Yes.
So that's why it's called dumb cane. And it actually has kind of a little bit of a dark history because they used it in long time ago to basically punish slaves, things like that. Yeah. So that's what it has, but it's a beautiful plant. As long as you keep in mind, you don't want to take a bite out of it. Most people aren't.
Yeah.
However, pets may, and little children. So you do want to watch that plant in particular. And then there are, like I said, there are others, but, and then when you're pruning it back or something, wash your hands afterwards.
Right.
Think about, don't rub your eyes after, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. Now let's talk more about the easy to care for plants, but the tree-like indoor plants, like the parlor palm. Is that one behind you there?
Yes. So there's a parlor palm. Yep. That's really nice, easy. And the dracaenas get very large. We also have fiddly fig. I've got one around the corner there and over there. They get very tall and pretty.
Those
are really fun. Ficus benjamina, there's one over there, and then I have a smaller one too. The ficus benjamina is really nice because it really does feel like a tree. Like of all the houseplants you can grow, it has more of a tree-like feel to it, right?
Yeah. Now, one thing I noticed about it is if you move it, it loses all its leaves. And I thought I killed it. It takes a while, but it seems like it eventually will come back.
Yes, exactly. That one is notorious. The ficus benjamina is notorious for protesting when you move it. And then scaring you.
Yeah, very much.
You could try. I have tried before, and it has actually helped. Telling it, look, because I do talk to my plants. Look, this is just this is for your own good. Please don't lose your leaves.
Because you've spent all this time, a couple of years or more, tending it, and then all of a sudden you have to move it, and then
when that happens, you want to cut back on watering some, since it doesn't have all the leaves to go, and then let it as
yes.
it, and then you'll see it'll decide to not be unhappy with you. Promise that it won't. You won't move it again, and maybe
that's it. But that would make sense. If it has less leaves, you need a lot less water. So.
Then the other ficus too. The rubber tree is ficus elastica. There's ficus audrey is another one. So that's another really pretty one. So the ficus are pretty fast growing as well. So those are good ones.
So it's hardy
tree
and fast growing.
Yeah.
That would be a good one.
And yuccas can be grown indoors as well, very successfully, and they get nice and tall. The ponytail palm can get with a more mature plant can get to a really good size. I do have one of those, and a big caveat with that one is not to overwater that one, because that the caudex is the base, is that the big bulb, but the, right. that is full of water, so it's
self-contained.
Yeah,
almost.
Exactly. Yeah, so that one you wanted to let go dry like succulents.
Okay.
And cactus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that covers a lot of the.
Good to know. Yeah, so that covers a lot of the hard to, or easy to hard to kill plants.
Yeah.
Easy to keep, hard to kill.
Arrowhead vine I would add to the list too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have one here?
Yes, actually there's one right there.
Oh, that's it? Oh yeah, it's the one that
yeah,
shaped,
it shaped like an arrow. Yeah,
right,
and then there's ones that have pink in them and a lighter green and a darker green. I have another one that has some pink in it as well. So that's a really nice one as well.
Yeah. Any other ones that you'd like to add to? I know there was a long list, but do you have a favorite? Looks like you got lots of favorites.
Yeah, it would be hard for me to choose a favorite. I think the...
What's this one down here? Is that the prayer plant?
So let me see. Is it on the... Oh, yes, that's the prayer plant.
Yes,
the prayer plant. That one is a little more tricky. I'm glad you mentioned the prayer plant, however, because one of the key things for keeping the prayer plant healthy is that you want to make sure to use reverse osmosis or distilled or rainwater.
Oh.
Because it's very sensitive to things in water, including chlorine, fluoride, there's chloramine apparently as well, as I've been told. And you can get rid of the chlorine by letting it sit for the 24 hours, but you can't get rid of the other things. So that's where those plants go downhill very quickly when you use just regular tap water on them.
Okay, yeah. So distilled water for the prayer plant.
You distilled, or reverse osmosis is good too. Okay. It takes out.
Takes out the
minerals and things. So that's something to keep in mind. Caladiums are nice, and calatheas as well. I love calatheas. Calatheas are in the same category, needing to use that distilled water.
What's their common name?
The calathea. Actually, that's pretty much their common name is calathea. It's funny how there's some plants that they just never get a common name, or if it is, it's not as widely known.
Right.
But you know, as you know, as a master gardener, it's better to have the botanical anyway, because there's so many trumpet vines out there. Which one is it, right? Or whichever.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. How about we talk about some spring gardening chores for houseplants?
Yes, so that's really, really good. The repotting is, which we've already talked about some. Spring is an ideal time to repot your houseplants. It's the best time of year. As I mentioned, winter isn't a great time because plants aren't actively growing at that time, so you have a lot more chance of having transplant shock at that time. But in spring, the plants are ready. They're getting ready to grow, and you give them some new soil. And what you want is a really good, I like organic potting soils, make sure they have good drainage as well, some added drainage as well. And when you put that plant into the soil at its prime growth time, it's just game on. I'm going to grow crazy for you because you've just given me this wonderful new soil to grow in. So that's a really good thing to do. Some pruning at this time of year too, if there's things that if a plant's getting a little too unwieldy or a little top heavy, or if it's getting a little, there's too much growth on this side that you not as balanced. One thing, however, when you prune houseplants, you don't want to prune by more than one third at a time.
Okay.
And once again, be careful when you do that you don't mess up the three quarter ratio. Two thirds to one third is what I should say. The two thirds to one third for most plants. The plants that like to go pot bound would be more like three quarter to one quarter, but that's another. So that the, and fertilizing you can start fertilizing again in the spring because it's best not to fertilize in the winter as well. Looking for pests and diseases, giving them baths. Those are some really good things to do at this time of year.
One thing, going back to the Dracaena, and you're talking about pruning, I had a friend that his Dracaena got too tall, so he clipped the top, like, I don't know, 12 inches off and stuck that in a pot, and it's not dying. It's alive. I don't know if it'll grow or not, but what do you think about that?
So the best thing to do if you would, because Dracaenas will get tall, and there are other plants that will get very tall as well, the best thing to do is to what's known as air layer the plant. Mm. And the process is that, so you've got that tall stem, you want to right above a stem node, you know, those bumps in the, where the new, that those bumps in there, those are stem nodes. They can also be root nodes. So very similar, and they have auxins in them, which are rooting hormones, basically. So what you do to air layer the plant, and this will make sure that you have that the plant will be, the new plant that you're cutting off will be healthy, is you cut a notch in there, and then you put in rooting hormone powder in there, and you put a sphagnum moss around it, moisten it, put it around it, and put a plastic bag around that, and then roots form on the top part.
Okay.
And then you cut it off at that point, and then you have a new plant with roots.
Okay. Oh, okay. The roots are coming out, so you cut below the roots.
Yeah.
And then, move it into a new pot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you've saved that top part, and then the plant that's left is going to start branching out from where you've cut it, providing you've cut it right above a root node.
Above a root node. Okay, I got to remember that.
Yeah.
I'll probably go home today or tomorrow and do that to one of my Dracaenas. So
good.
That's great information. Okay. Let's see. We've got about 10 more minutes.
Okay.
A little less, maybe. What about fertilizing the organic way?
Yeah,
that's
so
a big one.
Fertilizing is really important. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the growers will use chemical fertilizers, which are very high in nutrients, to get them to grow very quickly, but it's not a really good way to sustain the plants. And you have more of a chance of root rot and chemical burn on the roots because of that too. So you can recognize the chemical fertilizer with the higher NPK ratio, 30, 30, 30, 40, 40, 40, 50, 50, 50. It's kind of like where they talk about you take too many vitamins, they're going to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's even just overkill anyway.
Right.
Something under 10, 10, 10 or under is generally organic. And as I mentioned earlier, you want to mimic Mother Nature as much as possible, right? So Mother Nature is not using chemical fertilizers.
Wow.
What happens in nature actually is humic acid. So leaves fall and they decompose, they create humic acid, and that feeds the roots. So humic acid is something that you can buy in as a part of fertilizer, or you can even buy it separately as well. So that's, you can see, look for that humic acid on the fertilizer, the guano. So natural things that are out there, right? Bat guano, bird guano. We know that they're out in nature and the animals are fertilizing the plants, right?
Right.
Then there's things like green sand, which is a good thing for houseplants as well.
Green sand.
Yeah, and that's, I believe it's mined from I don't know if it's near oceans. I'd have to check into that for sure. But it has some micronutrients. So what you're looking for is not only the macronutrients, but the micronutrients as well.
Right.
Organically, you probably wouldn't want to use indoors is fish emulsion. It's pretty smelly.
Oh,
yeah. However, the kelps that I mentioned earlier, there's kelp fertilizers that are very, they come in liquid form and otherwise in the granular as well. So as I mentioned, mimicking Mother Nature as much as possible. And what happens when you do that is you create a self-sustaining environment for the houseplant in the soil. And the soil is what you want to keep healthy. So you're feeding the soil. And when you do that, you don't have to fertilize as much. Because what happens with the chemical fertilizers is they're used up and then the plant needs more. So you kind of get them hooked, right? But when you have all these natural... And alfalfa meal was the natural growth hormone. That's also a fertilizer to add to. The bone meal is good for the, especially for fruiting and flowering plants, but every plant needs some as well. So you don't really need to fertilize that much when you fertilize organically.
You can How often do you fertilize?
Every 3-4 months,
like
maybe.
Once a quarter.
Yeah, about once a quarter.
Not
yeah,
every 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, about once a quarter. Yeah, and then even there's some plants that can go a little bit longer. So it's not you're not constantly doing that. Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah.
Humidity. Do you want me to touch
let's
on humidity?
Talk about humidity.
So humidity is one area where a plant. Not necessarily is going to not die if it doesn't have enough humidity, but you're going to have a lot of growth problems when the humidity is just too low. Brown leaf tips are a sign of low humidity. They can be a sign of other things. They can be a sign of fertilizer burn. Mm-hmm. Fertilizer burn, just stepping back a bit from that, will not only kill back off roots and can cause root rot, but it can also cause crispy edges and tips as well. So that's something to keep in mind with the fertilizer aspect. But also with the humidity, it's you're going to get the brown leaf tips, you're going to get some leaf loss, the plant's just not going to be that healthy. So there's different ways you can humidify plants. Misting, but you need to mist a few times a day. You can't mist like once a week because it's just... it. Humidifies the air for a little bit and then it's gone again. Some people do use humidifiers, and they're very dedicated to their plants.
I'll say.
Pebble trays where you put a little bit of water underneath the pebbles or the marbles and that will humidify the air a little bit around the plant. And my favorite is getting more plants because plants transpire. We perspire. They transpire. When they transpire, they emit moisture into the air. So the plants will humidify each other.
That's great.
So you can even tell with a hygrometer, and a hygrometer is a good tool to have. They're very inexpensive. It will give you the relative humidity in the room as well as the temperature in the room. And you can put, like if I put one in here right now, it'll be about 50% humidity because of all the plants. And even sometimes it'll go up even higher than that too. The good range for humidity to keep most houseplants really happy is no lower than 45, and 45 is a little low. Sweet spot is really like 50 to 60-ish, but 45 to 55 is good. If you get lower than the 45 on a continual basis, you're going to have humidity problems. Oh. You're going to want to look at ways to humidify. And some plants, certain plants like are more need more humidity than others as well.
That's a really good tip. I had not heard that, but I love the way you can just make a little neighborhood of plants and they'll give each other
So
humidity.
You know, we say, I have to go out and buy more. It's, you know, and my plants need more humidity.
Right.
Staking. Staking is something. So some plants need staking. There's different reasons for staking. Certain plants need staking because we want them to grow upright in our home environment, and orchids are a good example of that because naturally out in their native habitats in the jungles, they grow upside down from trees. That's how orchids generally grow.
Oh,
you can
orchids.
See some over there, and they're actually growing more naturally, hanging. They hang down. However, in our homes, generally, we want them to grow upright. So we'll put like a stake in there, and there's curved stakes for the Phalaenopsis is this one here, which is just finishing a bloom. But that will hold it up so that you can see it. So basically, it's so I can see that philodendrons also, the bigger leaved ones, those you kind of need to stake so that they're upright. But then there's other things that will get top heavy that you just want to keep up so they don't come out of their pot. And Diffenbachia actually will get pretty top heavy too. So when you do stake, you want to be careful when you put it into the soil, and you also want to tie with green tie tape. It's stretchy green garden tie tape, because if you use something like metal or something work its way into the trunk of the plant.
Yeah,
it's called girdling, and it can even kill the plant.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You want to be careful with that. Yeah.
Right. Oh, let's talk about gifts for the gardener in your life.
Yeah, so gifts for the gardener in your life. Of course, houseplants.
Yeah.
And then you could start, if they're new to gardening, indoor gardening, you could start with the easy-to-grow ones. And there's also a lot of really nice plants that are on trellises and that sort of thing. The ivies are very common for that. They are a little more difficult to grow, though, so that's something to keep in mind. I would keep with the more standard, easier to grow plants. You can dress them up with ribbons and bows,
yeah.
and little. There's really nice little figurines and things,
yes,
nowadays,
especially around Thanksgiving. You can put it. Herbs together in a basket or something, and then get the fall colored ribbon, and
exactly,
you can do
yeah.
that for any holiday. And
uh-huh.
It really is—it's so fun and pretty. Yeah,
exactly.
And I see you have a mister here, and I have to tell you about my mister. I got it as a gift,
uh-huh.
And it's so beautiful. It's by an artist in Denmark.
Oh,
and it's stainless steel, and it goes up like this. It has a long neck. And it's so beautiful. I think it's a piece of sculpture, so I just keep it in my living room, out in my living room.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it away in the cabinet.
I wouldn't. I would definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So I just had to share that.
Show that off. That's nice.
So one last thing. I think it would be really fun to people to know about fragrance, where fragrance comes and goes. Because I went to the Huntington, and they had all those rose bushes, but it was late and it was warm. And not one of them had any fragrance. And then I read this and I thought, that's how it's happening.
Yeah, so when a plant's essential oils evaporate and the molecules are released into the air, that's when you smell it. And as I mentioned earlier, Seb, with your Hoya, sometimes it only happens at dusk or in the evening. So it just depends on when the plant's going to release those molecules into the air. And interestingly, the white and pastel blooms tend to be the most fragrant. And pale pink is very fragrant as well. When you see things like the bright orange and the crimson and things like that, they may look really nice and eye-catching, but they usually don't have very much smell. So that happens sometimes with the roses too, depending on the roses. And the flowers, the fragrant flowers, they produce the scent to attract bees and discourage pests. You know, of course, it's nice for us to be able to smell them, but yeah. If you do smell one that doesn't, you'll know that it has other things that it's doing.
Right. Well, gosh, it's been great spending the hour with you. We've covered a lot, and
this has been a lot of fun.
Well, I thank you for your time and your knowledge, and I need to let our listeners know that we have a hotline for any questions. It's kind of a long address. It's UCCEOCMG hotline at ucanr.edu. Or better yet, just Google Master Gardeners of Orange County, and there's lots of information there along with how to get in touch with our hotline. So again, you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and tune in again next Thursday at 8:30 for In the Garden. Bye, everybody.